This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. High-level meetings are scheduled here in Washington tomorrow to discuss U.S. policy toward Iran. While relations have been chilly since the hostage crisis in 1979, there have been periods of relative thaw. A recent series of informal conversations was broken off, and over the past few weeks in particular, tensions have increased. U.S. officials accused Iran of harboring the Al-Qaeda command cell that orchestrated the attacks in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia earlier this month. Iran denies the charge. And the U.S. has long believed that Iran is developing nuclear weapons. Again, Tehran rejects the accusation. The most recent statements came today when Foreign Minister Kamal Karazi addressed the meeting of the Organization of the Islamic Conference, which is currently underway in Tehran. And joining us now from the Iranian capital is Roxana Sabri. She's the Tehran correspondent and bureau chief for Feature Story News, and thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Neil.
What can you tell us about what the Iranian foreign minister said at the meeting, particularly about the accusations involving Al-Qaeda?
Well, the Iranian foreign minister, he basically said, he gave the introductory speech, one of the introductory speeches to the group here, and he said that Al-Qaeda and Taliban are both fanatical and perverted, and he says they have nothing to do with Islam. Outside of the actual convention in the hallway, speaking with reporters, he said that his country is still questioning the detainees that are suspected of having ties to Al-Qaeda. And his spokesman, Asefi, says it's unclear if there are any senior members among these detainees who know about the Riyadh bombings, the bombings in Saudi Arabia. Also questioned about his reaction to what the White House spokesman Ari Fleischer said about saying that Iran's response to cracking down on Al-Qaeda has been an insufficient. Asefi says U.S. double standards. The U.S. has double standards in confronting terrorists.
And in that, he was referring to a group called the People's Mujahideen, who were on the list of terrorist groups, official list at the State Department, and had bases in Saddam Hussein's Iraq, which they used to launch attacks against Iran. The United States has been less than clear about what the status of the People's Mujahideen is right now.
That's right, and some people in Iran think that the U.S. is using them as kind of a bargaining chip. Of course, that group has been, the Iranians claim, have carried out several terrorist activities in Iran over the past several years. So that is something that is on the minds of many Iranians, and when the U.S. Made an agreement with the Mujahideen Khalq, it, of course, outraged many Iranian leaders here.
Now, the other major issue at the moment is nuclear weapons, and there was more on that today from the Iranian foreign minister as well.
That's right. As you said, the U.S. claims that Iran is pursuing weapons of mass destruction, and the foreign minister didn't actually name the United States when he was giving his speech today in the opening session, but he did say that any concern about noncompliance with weapons of mass destruction should be dealt with through international cooperation. He says that the International Atomic Energy Agency, the UN watchdog, should be the only competent authority for making sure that states are complying with the Non-Proliferation Treaty. And he actually said that the international community should instead be pressuring Israel to sign up to international arms control treaties because he says Israel is the biggest threat to security and peace in the Middle East region.
And the other, at least new issue, there are plenty of issues between Washington and Tehran, but the other new issue is Washington's allegations of Iranian interference in Iraq. Has that come up at the meeting, either from the Iranian foreign minister or elsewhere at the meeting of the Organization of the Islamic Conference, which is, what, 55 of the 56 members are there, Iraq being the other one? It doesn't have a government right now.
That's right. There are 57 Islamic countries that are part of this organization and then three observer states. And most of the people, many of them were foreign ministers, although some other states sent other representatives. And Iraq was actually not invited because reportedly there was not a representative they knew to invite here yet. So, but as for your question about if there is anything said about U.S. allegations if Iran was interfering in Iraq, not directly during the conference. They didn't directly address that, but the foreign minister did say that he said that there has been delay and procrastination in rebuilding Iraq, and he says this is increasing concerns in the Islamic world. And many members there say the UN should play a pivotal role to help reconstruct Iraq. And also the foreign minister said that there should be an election of a broad-based representative government to end what he said occupation of the country as soon as possible. And that could be said that could be seen as a reaction to the U.S. allegations that Iran is trying to interfere in Iraq by putting in a Shiite Muslim government or a government that is based on the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Relations, as we all know, between Iran and the United States have been between bad and terrible since 1979. They regularly label us the Great Satan, and President Bush put Iran on the list of the Axis of Evil. In general, what's the state of the rhetoric that you're hearing in Tehran today? What are attitudes like toward the United States?
Do you mean people on the streets?
Yeah.
Their reactions? Well, I should say, first of all, that it's possible that my phone call is being monitored, so I can't say everything. But there are mixed reactions. Of course, a lot of uncertainty about what will happen next. A lot of people ask me, is the United States going to attack Iran anytime soon, as if I have conversations with President Bush. But a lot of people are curious. A lot of people are suspicious of the United States. They think they came to the area just for oil. And a lot of people are, they say if the United States is, instead of the United States pressuring Iran for change, they want Iran to change from within. But of course there are many different kinds of opinions, and it depends on whom you talk to and where you are when you talk to them.
Well, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Roxana Sabari is the Tehran correspondent and bureau chief for Feature Story News. She was with us by phone from Tehran. If you have questions about our relations with Iran, join the conversation. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now to talk about the growing tension is NPR's Mike Schuster. He joins us from NPR West in Culver City, California. Welcome.
Thanks, Neil.
One of the problems with setting policy toward Iran is the divisions within the Bush administration itself. You did a piece this morning that I think probably many people heard on Morning Edition. Is this breaking down roughly along the same lines of the hawks on Iraq and those who preferred to go it slow?
It certainly seems that way. There are those in the State Department who view diplomacy as the primary way of advancing the Bush administration's agenda vis-a-vis Iran, and they also believe that there is a faction within Iran close to the president, Mohammad Khatami, that are reformers and that can be interacted with. And then there are those that seem primarily placed in the Pentagon who feel that it's useless to talk to the Iranians, that no change has taken place in Iran, despite the fact that Mohammad Khatami is serving a second term, and that the hardline clerics are the ones that call all the shots, and they're the ones that are pursuing nuclear weapons and perhaps supporting terrorists or specifically al-Qaeda, and therefore that the United States needs to pursue a policy that would destabilize the regime. And that's the argument that's taking place within the Bush administration right now.
And what is each side saying in terms of, you know, what needs to be done? I mean, what do they mean by destabilization?
Well, that hasn't been spelled out publicly, Neil, and it's in fact a puzzle. It was easier to understand in the Iraq context and even perhaps in the North Korea context, but because there's this bifurcated government in Iran, it's hard to tell what destabilization means and whether, in fact, the United States, if it took covert action, could destabilize the clerics while leaving Mohammad Khatami and those who support him in power, or free to pick up greater power if the clerics lose power. So it's very difficult to understand exactly what the hardliners in the administration want to do vis-a-vis Iran.
And those who prefer go it as slow is to continue diplomatic openings such as exist and try to deal with concerns over nuclear weapons, for example, as Iran suggested today through the International Atomic Energy Agency, the United Nations?
Well, in fact, the Bush administration has urged the International Atomic Energy Agency to look at what's going on in Iran. And in fact, there was a big delegation from the IAEA that went to Iran and visited some sites that had been previously secret. This was back in February. And there is expected to be some kind of report from the IAEA in June, and that may, in fact, raise more internationally the question of Iran's interest in nuclear weapons, and then it may go to the Security Council. And that's the route that the Bush administration, at least those in the State Department, have urged that the IAEA take.
Now, among others, Senator Joseph Biden, the ranking member, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, has been urging caution, saying, first of all, there's no crisis here, and that the administration, absorbing Iraq, a place that is hardly settled at the moment, ought not to be taking too much on its plate at once.
Well, certainly that's the Democratic view, and there's some sympathy for that view in the State Department. But the administration has upped the temperature of the rhetoric because of some intelligence that surfaced last week that there may be al-Qaeda senior figures in Iran and that they might have had something to do with the bombings in Riyadh earlier this month. And if that's the case, and if those in the administration are convinced that, in fact, al-Qaeda is being harbored by the Iranian government or some faction of it, clearly this administration, the Bush administration, is not going to wink at that or go slow in that area. So that ups the ante, in a sense, and makes current tensions between the United States and Iran all the more urgent.
What do you know about this intelligence about this al-Qaeda cell? And after a lot of people are pretty suspicious of U.S. intelligence these days.
Certainly they are, but they have surfaced attributing to intelligence agents, unidentified and unnamed, the belief that there have been some telephone intercepts, possibly some cell phone intercepts, from what are believed to be al-Qaeda senior figures in Iran somewhere. It's never been clearly stated whether they are in Tehran or another part of Iran. Some reports suggested that they were in northeast Iran, much closer to the Afghanistan border, where they probably came, if they are in Iran, after the Afghanistan war or during the Afghanistan war. But there's also a difference in interpretation of what these possible communications intercepts mean, whether, in fact, these al-Qaeda figures, if they are there, simply were talking about the bombings in Iran after the fact, or whether they had something to do with the actual planning. And as I understand it, there's an argument over the interpretation of this intelligence within the administration, as well as U.S. policy.
And that may have been why a meeting that had been scheduled, I gather, for yesterday was moved till tomorrow?
Well, possibly moved till tomorrow. There is also the issue that the Iranian government did arrest some figures, apparently from al-Qaeda, on Monday, or at least take them into custody in Iran. And although Ari Fleischer, the White House spokesman, yesterday said that that development was insufficient, there apparently is some argument within the administration over what steps the Iranians may take to do what the United States wants them to do with these al-Qaeda characters in Iran. And so that was another reason cited for postponing the high-level meeting at the White House and putting it off for a day or two.
We're talking about the growing friction between Tehran and Washington. The issues include, well, nuclear weapons, weapons of mass destruction, support of terrorism, human rights, and the lack of political development inside Iran. When we come back from a break, we're going to take your calls, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later in the program, we'll discuss what post-war duties American soldiers are responsible for in Iraq. And we'll also discuss the firing of a newspaper editor who'd been calling for changes in Saudi Arabia. Our subject right now is the growing tension in U.S.-Iranian relations. Our guest is NPR's Mike Schuster, who's with us from the studios of NPR West in Culver City. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is totn@npr.org. And why don't we begin with Naveed, who joins us on the line from San Francisco.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
I was just overhearing your conversation about your reporter in Tehran, and I just wanted to say that, you know, what the Iranian government usually says does not represent what the Iranian people feel. I was actually in Iran myself about 3.5 months ago. And first, I should mention that every Iranian person you meet in Iran, they have a cousin, a brother, a sister that lives in the United States. So, I mean, the people of Iran want democracy. That was the whole intention of the revolution, was for Iran to have a democracy. Unfortunately, the Islamic Republic of Iran took that away from the people and put it in a government which is very suppressive of the people of Iran.
And what do you think?
I just wanted to make that clear to the people out there that the Iranian people do not agree with the Iranian government and their policies regarding the United States of America.
And what do you think the people in Iran, at least those that you talk to, want the United States to do about that? Let things go along the way they're going and see what happens?
No, not at all. I think the people of Iran, they just need a nod from the United States telling them that the United States will back them up and the Iranian people can handle their own government. I mean, you know, we had a revolution 22 years ago. I'm sure we can have another revolution. I mean, the way things are in Iran right now, inflation is out of control. There is no jobs. The average person works three different jobs just to bring food on the table for their family. So I mean, the promises that the government made to Iranian people, they did not hold their promises. I mean, people were doing much better during the Shah's regime than they are now. I mean, that's and you ask anybody in Iran, they will tell you that.
Okay, Navid.
All the Iranian people need is just a nod from the United States telling them that, yeah, we have your back, and I think they can pretty much handle it. I'll give you an example of what's going on in Iran right now.
Okay, if you'd keep it quickly.
The Iranian government has brought in 30,000 Palestinian soldiers, okay, in case of a revolution in Iran, because as it is right now, an Iranian soldier is not going to kill another Iranian. Okay, so if there's any sort of conflict, they're going to bring in these soldiers that they brought in from Palestine to suppress the people. And that's just one example of how the Iranian government is dealing with the people over there.
Well, Navid, I'm not sure about that report about the Palestinian 30,000 soldiers, but thanks very much for the call.
It's hearsay, but I was just there 3.5 months ago, and that's what's going on.
Okay, well, thanks.
I mean, I have other examples I can give you. I don't want to waste your time, but there's many other examples of how the Iranian people are suppressed in Iran.
Okay, well, thanks very much.
No problem. Have a good day.
Mike Schuster, there are elections in Iran. The reformist element, as you mentioned, President Khatami, has been elected now to 2 terms, though the strength of the hardliners seems to have increased in the most recent set of elections.
It does. I'm not entirely familiar with all the ins and outs of the reform movement in Iran, but one gets the impression that Mohammad Khatami and his faction have lost some ground in the struggle with the clerics. They still control the interior ministry, they control the secret police, and a lot of the reins of foreign policy. One thing that, in relation to the things that the caller was just saying, is that the United States government, the Bush administration, has to take into account, in fact, what the mood in Iran is as it hashes out what U.S. policy ought to be there. And there are disagreements within the administration about whether, in fact, the Iranian people or people like the caller referred to are ready to change the government. Because if the United States does take steps to destabilize the government there, the Bush administration has to think about what process that would set in motion in Iran and what kind of a result in government that would have in Tehran. And there are deep disagreements about that as well.
Well, joining us now to discuss that precise point is Rob Sobhani. He's an adjunct professor of U.S. foreign policy at Georgetown University, specializes in Persian Gulf security. And he joins us now by phone from Rockville, Maryland. Appreciate your being with us on Talk of the Nation.
Thanks a lot.
And what should the decision makers, if they meet tomorrow or the next day or maybe next week to discuss this, what issues should they be considering? Where does this go?
Well, I think there are two fundamental issues at stake here for the United States. Our broad strategic interests in the Persian Gulf, which Iran has challenged, and at the same time, a more moderate and secular Iran would enhance. beyond our strategic interests, it's our fundamental goals and values as a country. What do we want to project? Do we project a relationship with governments that are authoritarian dictatorships, or do we engage in democracy movements, or and do we engage in openness and reform? It's really a fundamental argument right now within the administration as to what exactly it is that we would like to enunciate as a country and as a foreign policy.
Well, I'm not sure there's too many people in this administration or any other in the past 22 years that it's going to be too warm towards the regime in Tehran. I don't think there's a lot of dispute that the United States would prefer that somebody else was in charge there. How you go about making that happen, that's what's at issue.
I think that there, I think we have to overcome the psychological barrier that we've created for ourselves, that somehow the history of U.S.-Iran relations is a negative history, that we are at fault at any time during this history. I think the United States has every leg to stand on in terms of its relations with Iran, and that the way we go about bringing about change in Iran is to simply empower the Iranian people with the tools. And that empowerment consists of a very clear message from the White House that we do intend to change the government, but with the hands of the Iranian people, number one. Number two, we will not engage with the government of Iran because we consider that government to be a violator of human rights and a supporter of terrorism. And number three, ask our European allies who are doing business with the government of Iran to cease that business because the umbilical cord of the government of Iran is tied to Europe. I think if we embark on these three paths, we are well underway to a peaceful transition of government in Iran.
Well, let's get another caller involved. Mansi joins us from Newton, Massachusetts.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to remind your listener and your guest that the last time the United States interfered with the changing regime in Iran in 1952, the result was disastrous. I'm just amazed that the United States can just forget about what they've done. They toppled with the help of CIA, a democratic, popular, elected prime minister, Mossadegh, and brought Shah back. And in fact, the fact of the matter that people like me came 30, 40 years ago to the United States was because of the repression that Shah was imposing on people. And the fact of the matter that they brought these mullahs into power was the result of that coup d'etat in 1952. I do not think that really the United States should interfere. I think the reformers have some support, and I think we should support the reformers, and I think the Iranian people are able to change their destiny themselves. And I do not agree with the Navid, actually, that he mentioned about a couple of things that supporting this the interference of the United States. I do not support that.
Okay. Thanks very much, Mansi. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Rob Sabani, certainly 1952 did not turn out the way the United States hoped.
I think once again, first of all, it was the June of 1953, and once again, I think for the academic community, 1953 may be an issue. For those who remember this event, it may be an issue. But the fact is that the clerics actually supported 1953. The opportunity for the Soviets to influence Iran in 1953 was very, very great. But beyond all that history, the fact of the matter is that the young people in Iran are not thinking about 1953. They're thinking about 2053. They're thinking about when they get to the age of 53, will they have a job? Will they be able to pay for their kids' education? I think the issues today in Iran are not about the past. They're about the present and the future. And the record of the Islamic Republic is a very poor record. A poll after poll indicates a government that has lost all legitimacy. And so to the extent that the president has boldly stated that there is a distinction between the people of Iran and the government of Iran, I think that has really played well inside the country. I don't think 1953 is an issue, should be an issue. This is, once again, one of those psychological barriers that we've created for ourselves. I think we should be true to our values, and those values are freedom, democracy, and human rights, and leave the rest of it to the Iranian people to make that decision as to what form of government. But certainly I think we can give them the tools and the moral support to make that change.
When you speak of tools, are you speaking of money? Are you speaking of weapons?
I'm speaking about money, absolutely, to increase the broadcast, satellite broadcast into Iran. Iran, unlike Iraq, is an open society in many respects. People in Iran can actually access public radio. They can listen to your program via the internet. They can pick up the Voice of America, the BBC, and other various satellite communications into their country. So it's a more open society, and as a result, a more engaged society. And I think when they see the course of events surrounding them in Afghanistan, Iraq, and elsewhere, the question they ask themselves is, why not us? Why can't the United States pay attention to us in the broader context of a message of democracy and freedom? I don't think the Iranian people would want us to impose a solution. I don't think the Iranian people would want us to predetermine an outcome. But I think that certainly they would welcome our support if we help them with financial assistance. For example, once again, to increase broadcast into Iran so that there is a dialogue with the people inside the country.
Rob Sobhani, thanks very much for speaking with us.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
Rob Sobhani, an adjunct professor of U.S. foreign policy at Georgetown University, on the line with us from Rockville, Maryland. And Mike, just to clarify, I mean, there have been these informal contacts with the Iranian government over the past, obviously for at various times over the past 20 years, but fairly recently.
In particular, since right before the war in Afghanistan, the contacts between the United States and Iran started around the meetings in Germany to hash out a possible new government in Afghanistan. And American officials who were involved in those talks gave a lot of credit to the Iranians for positive input during that time. And since that time, late 2001, the more multilateral discussions that began boiled down to closer diplomatic contacts directly between the United States and Iran. And in fact, there were talks between a high-level White House official and the Iranian ambassador to the United Nations in Geneva recently. But because of this possibility that al-Qaeda may be in Iran and may have had something to do with the bombings in Saudi Arabia, those contacts last week were cut off. At least the administration seemed to say that they were cut off, although yesterday it wasn't clear. Secretary of State Powell said lines of communication to Iran are still open, and so did his spokesman at the State Department.
In advance of a high-level meeting on the future of U.S. foreign policy with Iran here in Washington, we're discussing where those, what the options may be. Our guest is Mike Schuster, who's with us from NPR West in Culver City, California. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And our next caller is Henry, who joins us on the line from Margate in Florida.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Okay.
The Bush administration and Colin Powell especially lied about Iraq having weapons of mass destruction. Why should we now believe anything they say about Iran when the United States possessing nuclear weapons?
Well, Mike, we mentioned earlier there's certainly a lot of skepticism about U.S. intelligence.
It's a problem that has emerged from the arguments that the Bush administration made about the reason for going to war in Iraq and the fact that weapons of mass destruction have not been found, nor has the Bush administration since the end of the war in Iraq have been able to make a really solid argument of the links between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. And so I think naturally a number of people, like the caller, are going to be skeptical when they hear again that the Bush administration is citing intelligence that's come from Iran, that there's a connection with al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. But I think it has to be taken seriously nevertheless, because it's being taken seriously by many in the administration. And on the basis of that, the Bush administration is going to determine what is U.S. policy toward Iran.
Our next caller is Peter, who's with us from Berkeley, California.
Yes.
Hi.
I'd like to say that of the many Iranians I talked to in the last 6 weeks, there was only one couple who really supported the Ali Khamenei government. The supreme leader is his title. Isn't that terrible? And almost all younger, educated people support Khatami. Mohammad Khatami, the prime minister. His problem is, of course, that he has no real power. Anything he does can be overruled by the others. Now, they are either going to evolve in the direction of a more democratic form of government, or they're going to have another revolution. Nobody wants a revolution. But if the United States weighs in with statements like President Bush's, that they are part of the axis of evil, that'll cause nothing but harm. Nobody wants to be pushed around by foreigners and told who to vote for. And to suppose that either the Shiites, the fervent Muslims in Iran, or the Khatami wing, the more progressive liberal group, are going to ally themselves with the Wahhabi branch of the Sunnis is just loony. I mean, it's like supposing that Jerry Falwell's going to go to work for the Pope.
And by that reference, you're not necessarily speaking about the government in Saudi Arabia, but rather Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda.
Right, yes, absolutely. They are not at all, they don't share at all the same brand of Islam.
Mike Schuster, I know you've done some reporting on this. There are a lot of religious differences between the philosophy of al-Qaeda and the people who run Iran.
The government of Iran was implacably hostile to the Taliban in Afghanistan. The government of Iran was pleased when the Taliban were overthrown. And at least in terms of ideology, there doesn't seem to be much that links al-Qaeda to the government in Iran. But experts in this field are puzzled by why, if in fact there are some al-Qaeda figures in Iran, why would they be there? And again, this goes back to the bifurcated government in Tehran. It is unlikely that the Khatami faction is going to want to support al-Qaeda, according to most experts in Iran. But there could be elements of the Revolutionary Guards, and the government doesn't have control over all of them, especially in some of the outlying provinces, who may see some usefulness to having some al-Qaeda in Iran that might undermine any kind of rapprochement with Saudi Arabia that the government in Tehran is pursuing, and that might want to stick a thumb in the eye of the United States somewhere along the line, and having al-Qaeda to do the work for them may be what they're thinking.
NPR's Mike Schuster, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Neil.
NPR's Mike Schuster was with it from NPR's studios at NPR West in Culver City, California. I'll get those initials in there one more time if I can. When we come back from a short break, what life is like for U.S. troops in post-war Iraq. And later in the program, we'll also be discussing the dismissal of a newspaper editor in Saudi Arabia fired after he called for changes in the wake of the bombings in Riyadh. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.